Truetalk.com/impact.
And good morning and welcome to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah. Stay tuned. We have an interesting show for you today. But before we start, listen to this music by Dafer Youssef. He is a Sufi artist from Tunisia. Very interesting music. It's a little bit slow, but part of what you're hearing is his own voice playing and singing. This is True Talk, and this is the music by Dafer Youssef. welcome back to True Talk. I hope you enjoyed this amazing music. It's a Sufi type of music, and Dafer Youssef is from Tunisia, and I think he lives in some European country at the moment, but he has amazing soul-reaching type of music. And the reason I have him is because I do. We're going to be talking today about Tunisia. Something happened in the past few days, and on the phone with me is Monji Dahoudi, who is president of Tunisian United American Association, and we're going to be talking about Tunisia because the president of Tunisia just passed away. Good morning, Monji.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
My condolences on the passing of the president of Tunisia. It's a significant event, not the fact that he passed away, but because Tunisia is the country where the Arab Spring started. So people are looking at the transition of power they did after the ousting of Ben Ali, and then the president, the former president, Mansaf al-Marzouqi, accepted that he did not win the elections, and all that. We're going to be talking about it because it's very significant, Monji, to talk about people's attempt to democratize without resorting to violence. So before we do that, is it possible just to let us, to let our listeners have a preview of what happened through the Yasmin revolution or the Arab Spring? How did it start in Tunisia?
Again, thank you for having me, and thank you for your kind words. The late president now, and we're trying to get used to the word late president because Mohamed Beji Haid Sibsi is or was or has been part of the main Tunisian, at least the historical changes that took place all the way, going back all the way to the end of the colonization of France. He was part of the party that resisted the colonization along with Bourguiba and others. He also played an important role in the early establishment of the Republic of Tunisia. He was part of the cabinet. He pretty much occupied the major posts as interior minister, foreign minister. And then later on, when the change came and Zine El Abidine had a coup d'etat, a bloodless coup d'etat, nonetheless, against Bourguiba. He played a small role at the beginning of that era, between 1991 as the head of the parliament. And then after that, he almost vanished from the scene. And he pretty much stayed quiet all the way until the revolution took place and started in late 2010. And 3 weeks later, Ben Ali fled the country, as we all know. In early 2011. We lived a very rocky three-month period in that transition, but then quickly the establishment brought Beji Haid Sibsi to the scene. He presided over the government. He led the government at that time all the way until the end of 2011, where we witnessed the first ever free and fair elections that Tunisians participated in, and that's what brought what's known as the Troika government, which is a three-party coalition led by a Nahda, who won the parliamentary seat, and then the parliament voted Mohamed Mansaf al-Marzouqi as the head of the Tunisian government all the way until 2014. At that time, everybody thought that Beji Haid Sibsi had done his job, came back, played an important role in stabilizing the country, but sooner also the same people who felt that Tunisia is not is in danger of a takeover by the Islamists, they also sought help from Beji Haid Sibsi, who established a new party called Nida Tunis in 2013, and then led that party into a major victory in 2014 through the ballot box. The party won the majority of seats in parliament. Beji Haid Sibsi won the election as president, and that was the first ever election that Tunisians directly elected their president. And it was a historical moment. And he was the president until he passed away a few days ago.
Some people were critical of the fact that he was in his late 80s or early 90s when he ran for office or when he became the president. Was it correct?
Critical. Look, if you look at the Beşiktaş history, he has a very mixed legacy to leave behind. Beşiktaş, he has some bright history moments. At the same time, he has some questionable moments and allegations against him that he participated in the oppression of even parts of the same party during Bourguiba. He is accused of presiding over a period of torture and killing some of his opponents during the 60s. But also, when he came back to power, again, he presided over a very mixed bag. Some of the decisions he took during that period in 2011, even though he did succeed in getting the country to free and fair elections that brought new faces and democratized the system in Tunisia. He presided over that period. At the same time, he made some blunders. He made some decisions that people consider as major mistakes, interfering with the Libyan issue, helping or opening the doors to certain areas in Tunisia to be used by NATO in its attack against the Gaddafi regime and all and others. And some people consider that as a major no. Some other issues involved, again, as I said, he has really a mixed legacy. And
But the age factor, some people were saying, the Arab world has endured the old age of presidents who stay into their 90s and they never leave. But then how could the young people who created the revolution, I know with all his legacy, like the question is always, aren't there young people that could lead the country? And which leads me to the question now that people knew that he was old,
Look, absolutely, that he was the oldest person that ran in that election, but we have to, this is counts actually for him, but he knew how to craft a message.
Mm-hmm.
He did not come to power in 2014 by the coup, or he was not appointed mm-hmm. to that position, but rather he ran a fair election. He crafted a message that appealed to young people across the board.
Amazing.
That appealed to more than a million women that voted for
Nkrumah
and voted for Beşiktaş Tepsi specifically to be president. Everybody knew how old he was. Obviously, he also was in good shape. He held several rallies, visited several places. These are things that we have to... His manner of speech and the way he united a huge, vast section of the Tunisian population to win that election and to win it decisively. Obviously, in a new Tunisia, we don't win elections by 90% or 99% as you all used to that in the Arab world. But
yeah.
He won the elections, the presidential election, by, I believe, 55% against a very strong opponent, Mohamed Mansour Marzouki.
So,
he was old, but it was his ability to craft the message that united Tunisians behind him.
I have nothing against being old and running for office and ruling. The reason I'm asking that is that was he the other side, that what Munsif al-Marzouqi, the first president after Ben Ali was ousted from Tunisia, that there was this continuous fear of Islamists taking hold of any emerging democratizing government in the Arab world? Was it that? That was their fear of Islamists?
Right. In big part, that was one of the message that Nida Tunis and Beşiktaş Tepsi ran on, is that they are there to protect the country from the Islamization of the society. That was appealing to a large segment of the Tunisian population. But at the same time, he also spoke about the many issues that faced that Troika government at that time that failed to succeed. That they were given 1 year to write a constitution, but they took about 3 years,
mm-hmm.
That they failed in many of the social and economic policies that they took, and that appealed, and he spoke the language of the common person. And in one of the speeches that is became later on as held against him is that in one of his rallies, he was speaking about an old woman who held one of the grocery bags that she couldn't fill it, and because she didn't have enough money to buy grocery, and he started, you know, he teared eye and was wiping the tears off his eyes in that speech. But that, at that time, it appealed to so many people, so many across the board. And as I said, he was a very clever, very great politician. He spoke in his speeches, in all his speeches, and I witnessed this firsthand when he visited the United States. He was supposed to deliver a speech that was wrote to him by his advisors in French at the U.S. Institute of Peace. But he, as soon as his advisor handed him the speech, I was there. He waved him off. He said, "No, I'm going to speak, from my mind and my heart."
In English?
In Arabic.
In Arabic.
Which was, by the way, which was almost the first for us, is to see a head of government come to the United States and does not use the French language, but rather speaks in Arabic. We broke out clapping, those of us who were proud of that moment, even though I personally did not vote for him, but definitely when he became my president. And I was very proud of that moment that he used Arabic as a language to speak to a non-Arabic speaking audience. And again, he had this ability to even quote from the Quran. I was at the Nahda Congress, which Nahda is an Islamist-leaning party. He was an invited guest, and he delivered the speech where he quoted the Quran in his speech more than the president of Nahda did in his speech. Mm-hmm. He has an ability to articulate message that appeals to the people in front of him, and that's one of his legacies.
Let me just remind our listeners that they're listening to True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM, and I'm talking to Munji Dahoudi, who is of Tunisian origin. He's the president of Tunisian United American Association out in D.C. We're talking about the passing of the democratically elected president of Tunisia, who just passed away a few days ago. I am sure there is going to be a formal ceremony and burial ceremony, Munji. And also, what's going to happen next? What's that like, the according to the Tunisian constitution?
Well, the constitution is very clear. The transition of power already took place yesterday. I mean, that's how quickly this was. As soon as the official declaration that the president has passed away in Tunisia, the head of parliament was informed officially, and he convened a meeting in parliament where he was sworn in as the temporary president. He will be president for a period of no more than 90 days. Mm-hmm. And then his vice chair in parliament becomes also the temporary head of the parliament. And so right now, our president in Tunisia, our temporary president, is Mohamed Nasser. He is from the same party as the late Bejefait Sibsi. Also, the independent council that oversees the elections announced yesterday that they will hold in early election in September. I think the first round will start September 15. So already the motion of transition has been taking place. Everybody was marveled, and extremely those who are, especially those observers from outside, were very surprised of how the Tunisian society, the Tunisian people, the institutions were functioning yesterday. Everything is normal. There is no tanks rolling down the streets, as we are commonly seeing in many different Arab countries when a head of government passes away. Mm-hmm. There is no state of emergency declared, immediately. There is nothing that you can notice unusual. People are, going about their business. People are vacationing. People are working. People are shopping. And so this is what's going to happen. Tomorrow will be the national day of mourning. There will be the funeral. Many head of states already declared that they will be attending. It's going to be a somber moment for Tunisia, but life goes on. We have worked, the Tunisians have worked so hard to establish a constitution that we all are proud of. There was no argument of who's going to be the president and who's not in among the politicians. Everybody knew what the process supposed to be, and that's what took place yesterday.
Any potential people you see running for election from either party or maybe an independent? Do you know anybody?
Right. Well, initially, I mean, this is an election year for Tunisia. So initially, the parliamentary election was going to take place in October, and the presidential election was supposed to be in November. But now that we have this early departure of Bejefai Sibsi, that the elections were brought earlier to September. According to the late polls, I mean, there are several figures that are leading the polls. Some of them are independent, they're outside the political parties. So others are, you know, Mansour Marzouki is one of the candidates. Tafi Saeed is a journalist, he's a known politician, he's independent, he doesn't belong to any political party, he's one of the candidates. Yusuf Ishad, even though he's the head of the government now, but he did not declare yet he's running, but everybody assumes that he will be running. One important thing to note is that Nahda Party, which is pretty much the number one party in the country right now, the number one bloc in the parliament, they said that they, at least the head of the party, Rashid Ghannouchi, said that he is not going to run. Everybody anticipated that he might run, but...
Can you explain to our listeners who is Rashid Ghannouchi?
Rashid Ghannouchi is the president of the Nahda Party. He's a very well-known figure and very well-known leader of the Muslim, what they call the Muslim Democrats in Tunisia. Others prefer to call them the Islamists. They're a very moderate political party. He's an influential thinker. He's got several books written about democracy, about freedom, human rights, and how he envisions, countries and government and civil government supposed to run. He was able to maintain leadership of his party and maintain the strong presence within the political scene as a united front. Pretty much, Nahda is considered the only party that did not fracture after the revolution, after the 2011 election or the 2014 election, maintained its coherence, unified front. So he's an extremely important figure, and everybody thought that he might be running for president. But he's also known to be a little bit controversial in some of the secular side, the left-leaning side of the Tunisian spectrum. He opted not to run, but he is running for parliament. Announced his candidacy at the head of one of the lists in the capital of Tunis. So most likely he will be in parliament. Under what circumstances? I'm sure he's not going to be just a regular member of parliament when he wins. But most likely he will be the head of the bloc or even the speaker of the house, to use the American term.
Wow. We are talking to Munji Dahoudi, who is president of Tunisian United American Association from Washington, D.C., and we're discussing the passing of the president of Tunisia. Are Tunisian people unique or, they are the ones who set the tone and started the what is known as the Arab Spring, but you know that in all countries, it almost failed. And some people say that one of the reasons it might have succeeded in Tunisia is the nature of the military and their position in the government. Where is the military from, like everything that you're talking about? Like you said, if the president of any Arab country passed away, you will have the tanks rolling in the streets to guarantee they decide who becomes the next president.
Right. The Tunisia is considered as the bright spot when it comes to the Arab Spring and the aftermath of the revolution. And so, looking at other places, as Tunisians, we say it with mixed emotions because definitely we would like to see other Arab countries also succeed in their transition to democracy. But that didn't happen, and the only place that happened is Tunisia. And so we say it as with mixed emotions, as we are proud of what happened in Tunisia, and we hope and hopefully we'll work harder to make it a success. And moments like these, even though they are tragic in the passing of our president, but the way our institutions function, the way our politicians from across the spectrum. Nobody opted for, you know, using this moment to for cheap shots or anything, but everybody was, you know, held together. There was a common sentiment. Everybody felt grief over the passing of the president, even though politically there might be differences, and history will judge what Recep Tayyip did and did not. But these are the moments. And yes, part of the reason, it's not the only reason, but part of the reason is because, historically speaking, the Tunisian army was, number one, does not have the capacity to rule. In Bourguiba, after the independence, the first president of Tunisia, he did not want to see a coup d'etat, for example, a la, you know, the similar to what happened in Egypt and in Libya and other places of the Arab world. So he made sure, as a civilian presiding over the government, that the military was not in position to, he did not want to take any risks, let's say. And so he kept the military, in a sense, underfunded, but also instilled in them the culture of that the military needs to stay out of politics. And it did. Stayed out of politics, stayed out of the economy. So the military in Tunisia, you cannot compare it to what the military in Egypt, for example. It's entrenched into the economy in Egypt, but not in Tunisia. So that culture has continued. And even after the revolution, at the moments where anybody could have easily grabbed power in Tunisia in 2011 after Ben Ali fled, the military refused to take power and refused to be involved and said, whatever the ballot box brings, we will accept and we will move on.
Even if
and that's what happened. And so this is a continuation of this culture. We did not expect the military to step in, and the military did not. So we Tunisians were not surprised.
It's a beautiful country, I hear, Dawoodi, and I hope one day I will visit it. I did a lot of research yesterday and watched several interesting YouTube films. Actually, I might be running one of them shortly. It explains Tunisia. It's in North Africa. It's a beautiful country. And my condolences again, and thank you for being on True Talk.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And to all your audience, I wish that you consider visiting Tunisia. It's a beautiful country, especially now after the revolution. We are free. You can come, enjoy its beaches, but also enjoy conversations and interact and engage with its people and watch in our new found democracy that we are proud of.
Thanks
for having me.
Hope so. Thank you so much. And let's go back to Daher Yusuf. I love his music. And again, some of what you're going to listen to is actually his own voice making this music. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. You're listening to Sufi music from Daher Yusuf. If you're just joining us, this beautiful music is by Dafer Youssef. He is from Tunisia, and he's very influenced by the Sufi order, which is a mystic way of looking at religion and Islam. And it's fascinating. Maybe I will put the name and the pronunciation, and I do have email from Tina. Sorry, Tina, I think I started emailing you about the CD, about Rami Issam, who is an Egyptian and a political activist and artist and living in exile in Sweden. Yes, he was what people call the singer of the revolution, or the January 25 uprising, or Arab Spring in Egypt. Thank you so much, Tina. Maybe the email didn't go through, I'm not sure, but I'll email you and let you know if you're gonna. I know of him, of course, and I do have him, his music on YouTube, but I appreciate it. And anyone who has any comment can always send us to True Talk or DJ at WMNF.org. I'm not sure why True Talk is bouncing the email, but send it to DJ at WMNF.org. DJ at WMNF.org. And those of you who want to call while we are on the air, you can always call 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. As I mentioned, I was going through so much about Tunisia since actually the passing of the president, because like Monji said, it's the country that set the tone for the Arab Spring, and when a vegetable vendor set himself on fire, he survived for 5 days, but he eventually died. The story, or the legend, is that a female officer slapped him and took away his permit or his card, and that's his only livelihood. He's a graduate of a university, like millions of Arabs who are graduates of universities but don't necessarily have a chance to have decent jobs because of the amazing rulers that are there in that part of the world. Not everywhere, but most of that part of the world. So Tunisia is a very interesting country. It's very tiny. It's in the north of Africa. And so while I was doing lots of, research, I found a very interesting video, actually, on visiting Tunisia, which summarizes, in a way, a lot of what's going on. But what I found was a short lecture by American historian Robert Satloff. He's the author of, obviously, a very famous book then. I think it came out at least 10 years ago, Among the Righteous: How Tunisians Helped Save Jews. I never heard of that. So I thought now that I educated myself yesterday, would be great to hear about this thing about Tunisia. So listen to this professor. He's a historian, and his name again, I think, is Robert Satloff. And he's talking about a part of the history of Tunisia that I personally didn't know about. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM, and I can take your phone calls after this segment. It's about 5 or 6 minutes. So listen.
Sometimes just by luck, and sometimes by, you know, good hard research, I found real live stories of Arabs who saved Jews. I found a story, for example, his photo is on the back of the book, a man named Si Ali Sakat. Si Ali Sakat was the mayor of Tunis at one time. He then retired to a country home in the Zaghouan Valley, which is right where the battle line was in spring of 1943. And at one point in the heat of battle, 60 Jewish escapees from a slave labor camp, knocked on the farm door, looking for refuge. Now, you have to remember, at this time, the piece of territory that he lived on had gone back and forth and back and forth during the war half a dozen times. He had no idea whether this time the Allies would win or the Germans would win. He let them in. all 60, and gave them refuge until the battle was over and the Allies had come through. He's a hero. Or there's a man named Khalid Abdul Wahab. Khalid Abdul Wahab was a notable in the town of Mahdiya, in a coastal town in Tunisia. One night, he learned that a German officer was going to rape a beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed Jewish woman. Khalid got to the place where that woman and her family were hiding. They had already been kicked out of their home, which the Germans had taken for barracks. He got to the place where that woman and her family were hiding, knocked on that door, and said, "You have to come with me." And he took all of them, that family and several other families that had sought refuge in this place. It was an olive press factory. And throughout the night, he shuttled them in his own car back and forth to a family estate that he owned 30 kilometers outside the town. And he kept them there for 6 weeks until the Allies expelled the Germans from his town. Now, that story was told to me by an amazing woman who was the daughter of the woman in question. She was 11 years old at the time. She grew up 60 years later. She had been trying to tell this story for 60 years and nobody would believe her. She tracked me down on an internet posting. I had internet postings all over the world. Thank God for the internet. Without the internet, this book would have gone nowhere. She tracked me down. And she told me the story with such fervor that I had to take it seriously. And so, she was living in America. I was living in Morocco. I couldn't go and interview her. So I hired a professional Shoah Foundation interviewer in Los Angeles to go and do an interview of her. It produced an 83-page transcript of this woman's life and her experience. And then she died. It was as though the first time someone had taken her seriously, she had told her story and she died. So I had this story. And I had to try to track it down to prove it or disprove it, as the case may be. I showed it to two prominent Tunisian Jewish historians, and they dismissed it out of hand. They both said, "German soldiers did not rape Jewish women in Tunisia." Ha. So over the next 2 years, through the help of some remarkable people, mostly women, Tunisian Jewish women in France and in Israel, and two Tunisians in Tunisia. First, I was able to prove that, yes, regrettably, German soldiers did rape Jewish women in Tunisia. And I have stories of that, so much for those historians. And then, with their help, I took her testimony and went back to her hometown and knocked on the door of her childhood friends that she hadn't heard of in 60 years. I had her describe for me her entire life when she was a little girl, and she mentioned her friends and her school and everything, and I found her friends. And they confirmed the story that yes, this man, Khalid, did take her family away and took care of them throughout the end of the war. And then I went to the farm. I found the farm. And it was precisely as this woman had described it. Where the buildings were, where the pool was, what type of trees were on the outside of the main house. So it was true. And that was thrilling. And there were other stories. There was even a fantastic story in the heart of Europe, in the heart of German-occupied, Vichy-controlled Paris, where the most influential Arab of his day, a man named Sikador Ben Khabrit, who was the imam, the rector of the mosque of Paris, helped to save at least 100 Jews by providing them with certificates of Muslim identity, birth certificates, marriage certificates, so that they could pass as Muslims and thereby evade arrest and deportation. So taken together, these are wonderful stories. They show that in a time of war, Arabs were, as I said, very much like Europeans. Most were indifferent, some were perpetrators, and some were heroes.
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. You were listening to a recording of the author and historian Robert Satloff that he gave, I think, in some book store a while ago, actually several years ago. And he is the author of a book, The Righteous. And it talks about really something I had no idea. I have seen the movie about, I think, a French production movie about the imam of the Grand Mosque in Paris. I think it was a very popular movie, and it was also about a Moroccan Jewish musician who was gay, and yet the imam was able to go out of his way to help him by creating a headstone in the Muslim cemetery, because the police could not believe that he could be a Muslim, and the imam was able to create a headstone for him and put his, I think, grandfather's or father's name. But I really had no idea, except when the passing of the president of Tunisia, that I started to see what's there on YouTube, and I found this interesting lecture by Robert Satloff, and the book is Among the Righteous, How Tunisians Helped Save Jews. Would be interesting to arrange an interview with him after I read the book. But we're getting some emails. Let me go to Jane. The email here is again dj@wmnf.org, dj@wmnf.org, and Jane saying she's enjoying the show. It's awesome. She's very much interested in the music, and she wants the name. Let me spell the name of the artist. Let me play part of his music in the background. Obviously, people like his music. Dafer, D-H-A-F-E-R, D-H-A-F-E-R. Last name, Youssef, W-O-U-S-S-E-F. I think once you put D-H-A-F-E-R, you will be able to listen to it. That this sound, just a second. This one. This is his audio, his voice. The number to call is 813-239-9663. I have several people calling, so 813-239-9663. I'll play 1 minute of this, and then I'll take your phone calls. Back to True Talk. Let me go to Greg in St. Pete. Good morning, Greg. You are on True Talk Live.
Hey, good morning, Samar. I just want to let you know that it was nice to see the BDS resolution passed overwhelming a majority of Democrats. It came a nice smackdown on the squad and racism and anti-Semitism. The excuse to hate Jews is just a math that I think it is real.
Okay. Let me go. Hello? Okay, not sure what's the static here, but you can always call 813-239-9663. Might be the caller Okay. 813-239-9663. If you just called, I didn't hear most of what you have said. Sorry. But again, the people who are asking about it's Dafer Yusuf, and I just mentioned the spelling. Just put D H A F E R, and I think in YouTube, and you will find him. But maybe I should be doing some music shows because people love the music that I play. True Talk makes me, I think, a more educated person because I have to read and prepare and read a lot of books. But sometimes, really, I have to delve into music because this is also a music station. What's interesting is that I am being introduced to new artists every time I do this show, and maybe one day I'm gonna do a music show, but I'm not I don't know how to say it, but let me play one more song by Dafer Yusuf, because for some reason people like to talk about it more than politics now. This is Dafer Yusuf, and he is in Izmir, Turkey, and there is a lot of Arabic instruments like this one called Al-Qanun. Just in case people listening wondering where is the politics of the Middle East on True Talk, WMNF 88.5 FM. Obviously, the people love this music. It's fascinating because it's by a Tunisian Sufi artist. His name is Dafer Yusuf. Spell the last name, first name D-H-A-F-E-R. And he is playing in Turkey with two renowned Turkish musicians. One is playing Al-Qanun, which is a very old type of Arabic instrument or Oriental instrument. And then there is Daoud. He is playing Daoud. It looks like an inflated kind of guitar. So our NPR News is going to be coming very shortly, but let's listen to more of his amazing music. That's him singing now. Hope you enjoyed the music as much as I did and as much as many ladies sent me and said they loved the music. Thank you for supporting WMNF and thank you for supporting True Talk. And thank you, Airwaves, for giving the people a chance to listen to a different perspective of the Arab world, because if you listen to Fox News and such mainstream media, you'd think we're all not the crazy people. NPR News is next.